Thanks for joining us. Hope you survived your manic Monday. I'm not sure it could be more manic than the Miami Marlins and the ripple effects being felt throughout Major League Baseball. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Love to talk to you always. And on our Facebook page, a lot of you weighing in with this news from Miami, but not just Miami. Philadelphia also affects New York, also affects Baltimore. And could it be a shadow of things to come? Could it be just one small indicator that baseball is not going to be able to survive a 60-game season? Those are questions we don't have answers to, but we're going to ask some questions that maybe have some answers coming up here momentarily. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Most of the owners realize that we built protocols anticipating that we would have positive tests at some point during the season, that the protocols were built in order to allow us to continue to play through those positives. And I think there was support for the notion that we believe that the protocols are adequate to keep our players safe.
Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred on MLB Network on Monday addressing this mini outbreak with Miami and indicating they're not shutting down the league over what's happened with the Marlins and the way that it's affected other teams. We're pleased to welcome Ron Blum, who covers Major League Baseball for the Associated Press. Well, let's talk about the Marlins first. They're essentially the epicenter. Ron, what do we know with them in terms of quarantine and travel? What's next?
Well, from what we were told, 9 players on the 30-man roster, plus 2 on the taxi squad and 2 team staff, tested positive for coronavirus, and that caused Major League Baseball to postpone the games Monday and Tuesday. So baseball expected to get test results back into the night Monday into Tuesday and then make decisions on the Marlins from there. At the same time, the Phillies, who were hosting the Marlins over the weekend, they were all tested on Monday to make sure that they didn't get any virus cases from the Marlins, and then the Yankees were told to stay at their hotel in Philadelphia so that the visiting team clubhouse at Citizens Park could be disinfected.
Who makes these decisions? Is this a team situation where team by team is deciding when they play, when they travel, or is this all the way at the top?
Oh, it's all the way at the top. The decisions ultimately are made by the commissioner's office, where there's a chain of officials, and ultimately Rob Manfred makes the final call.
At what point do the ripple effects stop where you can contain it with those few teams?
Well, right now it was the Marlins were at Philadelphia over the weekend when the Marlins started testing positive. So they're running the test to make sure that none of the Phillies who were on the field with the Marlins at the same time were infected. It implicated the Yankees because the Yankees were due to go into Citizens Bank Park on Monday, so they had to wait at the hotel to make sure that the Phillies weren't infected.
And then, of course, it affects the Orioles, too, because they were supposed to play the Marlins.
Yeah, the Orioles were already in Miami for a 2-game series, supposed to be Monday and Tuesday. The Orioles would fly home Monday night, and assuming that there are no more positive tests, the Marlins would then head to Baltimore and pick up for a series at Camden Yards that starts on Wednesday.
Rob Manfred did an interview on MLB Network in which he said, "I don't put this in the nightmare category." But what's your feeling about here we are just past the first weekend, and already there's a situation like this that kicks in the protocols?
Well, I think for him, he says it's not a nightmare because he's viewing it from management standpoint and the owner's prism. The nightmare is not playing at all. And from what he sees, okay, they have X amount of positive tests right now, 9 roster players, 2 non-roster players on the taxi squad. And if it doesn't get worse, Major League Baseball thinks it can manage it. A nightmare for baseball would be multiple teams having more than a dozen players out, where it would affect the quality and the integrity of the competition.
How confident are you, though, that baseball can navigate these types of we'll call them mini outbreaks, let's say once a week or once every couple weeks?
Well, if it keeps happening, eventually it'll spiral out of control. Baseball has to hope it's isolated and doesn't extend further. Hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars at stake, even for an industry that's been decimated by the pandemic. So he's looking at this as something that, hey, hopefully players and teams together can control it. They've been talking to the Players Association on Monday, because one of the things, and even if you look now, the Pirate Red game just ended, players hugging each other and slapping hands, that's directly against the protocols that the players agreed to. They're supposed to cut out the high fives and the back slaps and stuff like that. And clearly, from what we've seen in the first 5 days of the season, maybe they're not celebrating wins at 100% exuberance, but they're certainly celebrating them at 50 or 60%.
Ron Blum is the national MLB writer for the Associated Press with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. In the case of the NFL, even the NBA, there are strict penalties, discipline, fines, potential long quarantines, like we've seen with Lou Williams of basketball. What does baseball have in place to indicate that the sport is serious about this?
Well, baseball, unlike the other sports, is pretty much jointly run by the teams and the Players Association together. So the commissioner's office staff held talks with the union staff today, and it's going to be up to the players to cut it out themselves, because baseball really can't impose discipline without just cause, and that has to withstand a grievance. No one wants to be running for grievance hearings, Mark Irving, the arbitrator, over high fives. So basically the message today was the union supposed to get the message out to the players, like, hey, you want to have a season, cut out the back slapping and the high fives.
Ron, other than the Marlins outbreak and these games that have been postponed, the teams that have been affected, when you look at the first 4 days of the baseball season, what jumps out at you?
For the first time in more than 60 years, no team won its first three games. Everyone went 1-2 or 2-1. And it was sometime in the 1950s, Elias said, since that last happened. So we're going to see a lot of pressure in these games, much more so than early season games, because each loss is worth 2.7 losses, each win's 2.7 wins. So you have, you lose a three-game series and get swept, that's like an eight-game losing streak. And everyone is aware of that. These people are thinking about this day and night. Yes, 16 teams are going to make the playoffs, and teams want to be in that position where they're hosting all three games in the first round. So there's a lot of pressure and a lot of tension on these guys' necks as they go out there. This is not your normal 35 degrees in April. These guys are hitting the mound hard, and maybe that's why we're seeing a bunch of injuries in the first turn through.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I was going next, Ron. So what concern is there when you look at some of the top flight starting pitchers, Corey Kluber, Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw? We've already seen a bunch of these guys injured and on the shelf. And this is nothing to do with COVID, but it's something to do with the baseball season itself and maybe the way that it stopped and then restarted.
It could be. Sure, you have to think that back issue is a bit chronic the way it's cropped up 3 years now in a row. Verlander was healthy last year. Now it's a nerve issue in his arm. He had a core injury a few years ago. And again, Kluber, these are veteran pitchers who are at an age where injuries start to crop up. For Kluber, I would think I would be much more concerned than the others, in that he only has a contract for this season, and he's one of the guys set to face that uncertain free agent market this winter with all the money sucked out of the system. Who knows how he'll be received? He's come off those arbitration cases. He has a reputation as somewhat outspoken and outlandish. So he has to be thinking about putting himself into prime position to get a multi-year contract. He says he doesn't want it, but he will get offers. So Yeah, and he's on a team that's did a lot of pressure to perform in the short term. And though, as I say that, of the 30 teams, there are probably 20, 25 teams feeling that pressure. Very few teams, when 16 teams make the playoffs, don't think they can get to the postseason. If you look historically, one or two teams with losing records would have made it to the postseason each year in most seasons under this format.
It's almost surreal to be talking about, say, next year or performing for next season at a contract when so much focus has just been on getting this season on the field, and it seems like every day is a major accomplishment. I don't even know if I can look that far ahead, but I suppose that is the business of baseball where these guys have to.
Yeah, and you go with most general managers, they have boards with the organizations on the wall. Some still have them physically there, haven't converted to the computer age. They're well aware who's a free agent the day after the World Series this year and next year, and they're making decisions going up to the trade deadline and retooling for spring training next year with winning now and winning next year in mind. You know, buried in that agreement last week was the suspension of the luxury tax for this year. That affects how some teams are going to be making moves now in the winter. So, yeah, these guys are thinking, what do we have to do to win tonight? But they're also keeping their eyes on being in position for 21, 22, and 23.
Ron Blum of the AP with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. In light of that, in light of the 2020 lens and everything that's involved, what was your reaction to seeing the Mookie Betts contract then, which was done before he ever played an actual game in Dodger Blue?
Yeah, and he could have been a free agent this winter. It was sort of one of these weird deals where, yes, he got $300 million, but because of the deferred money, he gets a lot less than he might have gotten, certainly if he had played it out on the free agent market. I think it's well into mid-2040s before he'll see all the money that he's owed. It's deferred at no interest. So present-day value, while his contract is $365, if you count the discount for when he receives the money, depending on how the economy plays out, it could be worth as little as $310 or $305 million. Understanding it's hard to put the word little in front of that figure.
So we're not quite talking about a Bobby Bonilla situation, but we are talking about him taking a big discount if you consider spreading it out over the life of the deal.
Yeah, and depending on how the next 13 years of his career plays out, it could be viewed as a Bonilla-type deal. It all depends on how he performs. If he is the player who was the MVP from 2018, it'll be viewed as a smart deal for the club. If he turns out to flame out and not have a great back end of the career, then he'll be viewed in the Bonilla category.
I guess that's one way to live on in baseball immortality.
Yeah, probably not the way you want to sign up for that.
No. So one of the things that it just totally blows me away about this season, especially with the 60 games, is that we have a third of the teams in baseball with brand new managers. I mean, when you start out in any season, especially if you're a brand new manager, you're talking about being, you know, an adjustment period and having to get used to your guys. But which of the managers do you feel like are set up in the best situation where, okay, this is not going to be quite as difficult a learning curve?
Well, I would think Joe Girardi in Philadelphia. That's a team set up prime to win now. He certainly knows what to expect. Some of the managers don't have a whole lot of pressure. Gabe Kapler with San Francisco, that's a team going into a rebuilding situation, and then you take away perhaps his best offensive player in Buster Posey, who decided to sit out. So he doesn't have that much pressure. I would think Houston's a situation. There's pressure to win now. And Boston, whether you think there's pressure or not, there's always pressure in that town where talk radio and this and in the Boston Globe, every move you make, you're either a genius or you're dumber than every fan who ever bought a ticket.
Well, you mentioned the three franchises that were affected most by the cheating allegations and the cheating scandal. Houston, of course, with Dusty Baker, not a long-term solution there, really. But with Boston and the New York Mets, is it possible they could make another change after this short season?
Oh, I think definitely with the Mets, obviously, Carlos Beltran never even made it to opening day. And Luis Rojas, now a rookie manager, although someone who knows that organization top to bottom, given his history. And a Mets, a team that may or may not be sold heading into the 2021 season.
Right.
So who knows who's going to be calling the shots there. There is no way to tell. So, I would think he's on the hot seat in Boston. There's already speculation that Cora could come back for 2021, and that Reneke shouldn't make long-term plans of redecorating the manager's office. So we'll have to see. In Houston, I think there's going to be a calming period, given that was probably cheating central for everything. And I don't see A.J. Hinch going back there, given that both he and his general manager boss were fired. So I would say Dusty has such a gravitas. No one messes with Dusty.
Ron, before I let you go, I actually had to remind myself to watch baseball, listen to baseball over the weekend, because I've gotten out of the practice of it. For you, as someone who covers the sport day in, day out, what was it like to see them take the field Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday?
It's somewhat surreal because it's like a spring training game that counts because there's no one in the stands. The fake crowd noise was somewhat prepared for from watching European soccer games over the last 2 months. So that wasn't so weird. But, it's just so strange to see an empty Fenway Park and empty Citi Field and empty Nationals Park, because the fans are a huge part of the sport, not just the color, but the cheering and the rooting. And yes, in the Northeast, especially the booing, that puts a lot of pressure on players to do their best at all times. And with that absence, it's a real game. You see everyone bearing down, and it has all the trappings of it. But with empty seats, it just seems sort of like one of those Star Trek episodes where they go through the glass and all of a sudden Kirk and Spock are wearing the wrong clothes.
But could the Astros have planned this out any better if they had any role in planning it, which of course they didn't? But come on, no fans in the stands, no booing for them this year after they get found out.
Yeah, but the thing is, in the Northeast, the fans will wait their time to boo them. They're going to get it. It might wait till 21. If need be, it's going to wait to 22, but it's coming.
No doubt the Dodgers fans will look forward to that as well. Ron Blum covers Major League Baseball, the national level. Never a dull moment. Hasn't been for quite a while now. It's great to catch up with you a couple of minutes, and we appreciate it so much.
No problem. Have a good night, Amy.
Seriously, if you are the Houston Astros, you have avoided all booing because cardboard cutouts do not boo. And you know where the Astros are headed next, right? Los Angeles to take on the Dodgers. There will be no booing from the cutouts. And they have, in my opinion, dodged a major bullet. Yeah, sure. There'll be some booing when they finally have fans in the stands again. It's not going to be anywhere near the intensity or the veracity as it would have been had they started out in late March and hit every major league ballpark full to capacity. Gosh. And then I think about A.J. Hinch, Alex Cora, even Carlos Beltran, if he still wants to manage. Your suspension is covering a season that may or may not even go 60 games. If they could have drawn it up, this would have been the perfect scenario. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Good to talk to you. On our Facebook page as well, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. some point, very soon, we're going to get to this Lou Williams disaster. And I'll have to admit, I was extremely naive. And then Roger Goodell has written a letter to fans. Oh, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
First pitch swinging, a shot to left field, going back on its Gordon. He'll look up, that's a goner! Alex Bregman's 100th home run puts the Astros up 4-3.
It feels good because it helped us win the game today. It gave us the lead, but definitely not satisfied with 100.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Does anybody want to hear from Alex Bregman of the Houston Astros? Probably not many. Maybe his mama. But Steve Sparks called his 100th career home run on the Astros radio network. I was baking cookies on Monday evening, and I was bouncing around on my satellite radio listening to a bunch of different games that were just getting underway. And I really enjoy listening to Robert Ford and Steve Sparks. The cheating scandal is not their doing. They were not banging on trash cans, so I still really love them and enjoy listening to them. And you know what? They had just as much energy and they were just as committed as if there had been a full stadium of fans. No, it didn't sound quite the same. In fact, on that broadcast, I really didn't hear the piped in fake noise, but I still enjoyed listening to them.
Loud noises!
And then Alex Bregman on home run number 100. The Astros right now are in the throes of losing Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole already gone. And there's some concern there. We'll see what type of news we get. When we spoke to David Sampson on our last show, CBS Sports HQ, longtime Marlins president, he said even if it's not an elbow injury requiring Tommy John surgery, the road to get back in a 60-game season, it almost eclipses him from returning. So we'll see. Yet another question for which we do not currently have an answer. We do have a little more information, though, about Corey Kluber. So Kluber didn't have the forearm strain and did not take to Twitter to tell people that this was not a season-ending injury. Justin Verlander does have a major following on Twitter, though, so if he wanted to set the record straight. What we did find out, though, is that after the one inning that Kluber pitched in his Rangers debut, so he lasted one inning, I think it was 18 pitches, if I'm not mistaken, it got steadily worse. So there was no problems for him when he was warming up. He started to feel that twinge, that pain. As the first inning went on, it got steadily worse, so they pulled him from the game. Chris Woodward said they were just looking for more information. He was going to be going through some tests, and now we find out he'll be shut down for 4 weeks, which is a big deal, especially for a guy who's attempting to restart his career after some setbacks, some of his own doing. Well, not his own doing. Some of his own health challenges, his own health issues related to pitching, others just... I mean, it's not his fault. He got hit by a line drive and had a broken arm. And so it's just been a frustrating couple of years for him overall. And this was a fresh start after getting traded from the Indians to the Rangers. Was it interesting to hear what Brad Lidge had to say, former big league pitcher, on Sirius XM MLB Network Radio. He indicates that he has experience with this type of injury.
Really tough news for Corey Kluber. I personally, it kept me out for the entire, it was 2011 that I had it. I got it the last day of spring training. Kept me out for the entire first half with the Phillies. And then the second half, I had to pass just tons of strength tests. And it's weird because your shoulder just isn't quite as strong on your follow through. So I was able to get through it without having to have a surgery. Corey Kluber could opt to get a surgery and repair, or he could try and opt and get through it with good old-fashioned rehab. And I think, obviously, at this point, he's going to try and do that. But I have to be honest, Case. He's going to be shut down for 4 weeks or more, probably 4 to 6 weeks of no throwing.
According to the MRI, it's a small torn muscle in his right shoulder, not requiring surgery, but as Brad indicated, it's at least 4 weeks. That's what he believes. So a grade 2 tear, small muscle in the right shoulder. He's going to have a plasma injection. So they're going to shoot him up. And at 34 years old, he's hoping that he can avoid surgery. But the issue, of course, is it's a 60-game sprint. 4 weeks? Theoretically, 4 weeks, you're talking about half the season almost. Not quite. But let's just say it's 4 weeks, so we're talking about right about the end of August, beginning of September. I mean, that's the stretch run, weirdly enough. And so Corey Kluber not getting great news, shut down at least 4 weeks with this tear in the right shoulder muscle. Small as it is, this is what it requires. No surgery at this point. Now, coming up, we've been talking about the Marlins situation and the protocols triggered in Major League Baseball with the Phillies, the Yankees, the Orioles, waiting to find out. NFL not quite in that same situation, but they also have their health and safety protocols that were agreed to by both the owners and the Players Association. Their chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, answering questions on NFL Network on Monday about not just their protocols, but also about how important it is for the whole community to be all in. Lou Williams. He is now the poster child for screwing this up. Just, I'm so naive. I didn't actually think it was going to happen. I figured that for a couple of months anyway, these guys could avoid going to strip clubs, having to get food at restaurants outside of the acceptable establishments. I'm so dumb. This is what happens. I'm so naive. How bad could it be? It's a couple of months. Okay, Lou.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I'm going into my fourth year in the league. I don't want to make it seem like there's a lack of care in my health because I take care of myself just as much as anyone. It's just I strongly don't want to be the guy that is a distraction if we do get moving in the right direction.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Zach Bader on our Pittsburgh affiliate, 93.7 The Fan, referring to the start of NFL training camps and then the season that is to follow. And Tuesday, July 28th, is the day across the board that all veterans are expected to report to training camp. They're going through the intake testing, of course, and they do not have any preseason games on the schedule, so the timing is a little fluid, but it's about getting guys in camp. It's about a lot of conditioning, a lot of drills to get them back into football shape after a spring and early summer with no OTAs. They're going to ramp up slowly. They're going to get used to the health and safety protocols. They're going to try this on for size. And if you look at the calendar, I know it's crazy to say, especially when we're still in the throes of summer, but football is not that far away. We're talking 6 weeks. Do you know Saturday is the first day of August? What? That is crazy. Saturday is the first day of August. My internal clock is so completely thrown off. How is that possible? I don't know. It's yet another question that has no answer. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Did you know right now Geico offers an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? It's on top of what Geico already saves you. So what are you waiting for? You can visit geico.com right now to learn more. 855-212-4227. 4227 on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. For those of you who took our poll regarding the high, actually, there's still 45 minutes left in the poll, regarding the high-profile defensive backfield members, that was very, very, very verbose. That's not the word I'm thinking of. The word escapes me. That was convoluted. I didn't need to make it so complicated. If you missed our poll regarding some defensive stars who were traded in the last year in the NFL, you can go and take the poll for sure. However, overwhelmingly, given the choice among Jalen Ramsey, Jamal Adams, now both in the NFC West, Minkah Fitzpatrick with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who only got one first-round draft pick in exchange for his services. Remember, he went from Miami to Pittsburgh, and a lot of people wondered, what in the Sam Hill is Mike Tomlin doing? Well, Minkah changed that Steelers defense and did it without running his mouth. I mean, it's just not the same situation as Jalen and Jamal, who both were determined to get out of their current situations, wanting new contracts, wanting a fresh start, yada, yada, yada. And so it bothers me a little bit that these guys got what they wanted, kind of. I mean, Jamal does not have the new contract he was angling for. And in his wake, there are a lot of Mets fans who would tell you they're fine with him being on the other side of the country. In fact, I heard one high-profile former NFL player who covers the Jets say it like this: don't let the door hit you in the ass on your way out. I'm just quoting. I won't tell you who it is, but I'm quoting. Joe Douglas, who's the new GM of the Jets, he wants to clarify one thing about the negotiations with Jamal Adams.
I just want to make it clear that I never promised an offer to Jamal or his agent. Nor was I ever dishonest or ambiguous in any communications with their camp.
So Joe Douglas has indicated, hey, this is not something that I had to backpedal on, that I had to retract. We never told Jamal he was going to have a new contract. And while they did say publicly they wanted to keep him, how do you pass up two first-round draft picks for a guy who is criticizing everybody that he can think of, from the coaching staff to the front office? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Before we hear from Dr. Alan Sills, who's the NFL's chief medical officer, different stage of the process, but dealing with a lot of the same hurdles and challenges as Major League Baseball, let's talk to Mark, who's in Toronto. Welcome to After Hours. Mark.
Am I on?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Amy, first-time caller, long, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I hope you're doing well.
I am. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. With the abbreviated season, I was watching the Nationals game. The guys on Masson were fantastic. Great play-by-play, and it made it enjoyable. I'm a big fan of Vince Scully as well.
Good.
Nonetheless, Blue Jays, there was a sense of urgency with pitchers. They don't have time like the Nationals last year at this time, 19 and 31. They don't have time for that. Every game counts. Do you think the sense of urgency helps the game? And can you see the schedule being reduced moving forward, provided an expanded playoff series?
No, honestly, I can't. And especially now after the way that the revenue stream has been affected in this shortened season, I feel like the opposite is likely the case. They're going to be so set in to get back to what was normal, quote unquote, because of the revenue that they're losing this season. And what we'd heard is $4 billion. So 40% of what, you know, their annual revenue roughly is $10 billion. I think, yeah, the opposite is going to be the case. They're going to want to have every single last game in 2021, if that's possible, with fans, because they're trying to recoup a lot of the revenue that's been lost. And also think that Major League Baseball has encountered this situation before. They've had this question asked before, but they've gone with 162 games because because of the nature of the sport itself and because of the way that it becomes more of a marathon, not a sprint. So to me, this is the aberration, not the rule. And I feel like with the financial challenges of 2020 and maybe beyond, they're likely to do the opposite. I mean, I feel like they're going to be looking for every possible way that they can increase their revenue stream, which is why it's one major catalyst for why they've expanded the playoffs, because it's an opportunity for them to have more games on national TV, which generates more revenue.
Fair enough. Thank you so much, Amy. And you have yourself a wonderful night, and enjoy the new home and the new yard. Try not to water the grass too much.
No, I don't water the grass, only the flowers. I feel like if the grass is going to die, it's going to die. So it just, I don't have it. I don't have a worry about the grass.
Get some rain.
Yeah.
All the best from Toronto now tonight, Amy. Take it easy.
Thanks, Mark. Good to talk to you in Toronto. Yeah, this is the summer of never-ending yard work. There's always something to do. So after I baked cookies on Monday, and the reason I'm baking cookies is because I'm taking my first mini road trip this weekend. So it's only maybe 36 hours that I'll be gone. I'm not going that far. It's just a couple hours away. But I'm going to see some friends I haven't seen in a couple of years. And so I want to go bearing gifts. That's one reason. The other reason is because I have a young friend who's graduating. It's a young woman that I mentor who wants to get into broadcasting. She's graduating from college this coming weekend. And I know she loves cookies. We've made cookies together before. And so I felt like this was a cool gift for her. And I can't just make one variety of cookie. No, that's not me. I tend to go all out. I worry that people won't like the one cookie that I make. So I did my oatmeal scotchies on Saturday. There's cookies everywhere. My kitchen is covered in cookies. And I made regular chocolate chip cookies on Monday night. And unfortunately, I'm still getting used to my oven. I can't quite figure it out yet. So the first batch that I put in had, crazy enough, the bottoms weren't burnt, but they were dark and crispy. But the tops were still chewy. So it didn't look like the tops were done, but the bottoms were dark and almost smelled like they were burning. They weren't. They're still edible. They're fine. The next two batches were okay, but gosh, I'm having a hard time figuring out this oven. So two types isn't enough because I can't share the crispy ones with people.
Stings the nostrils.
Yeah, they were good though. I think I had three of them just to test them out. You know, I had to have one from each batch. And I've decided that I'm going to try a new recipe. Pumpkin spiced and iced. Yep, I like pumpkin. I don't know how many people like pumpkin, but at least among my group of friends that I will see this weekend, I feel like there's got to be a couple people that will try pumpkin spiced and iced. They come with chocolate chips too, which is pretty cool. Anyway, so it's been a cookie experience. But after that, I had to go out and sweep my driveway. I didn't have to, but it was the last piece of the yard work to-do list. But it was getting dark, and so there I was, wondering if there was going to be a spider dropping from the tree above me onto my head somehow. And even at, this was 8:30, well, it was 8:45, close to 9 o'clock by the time I got toward the end of the driveway. It's almost pitch black out, and I'm still dripping. It's so humid. It was still 85 degrees out. Oh, my gosh. And so, yeah, the yard work is never ending right now. I'm sure many of you can identify, but I will say this. As much as I am not a huge fan of yard work, it's not my favorite thing. I do it just because I appreciate the results. And it's good calorie burner. It's way cooler to spend the hours and do the work in a piece of property that is my own. So this little slice of heaven, it's not a big yard, but it requires a lot of work. It's probably just about as much as I can handle. But I find that investing in my own yard as opposed to working in someone else's, yeah, it's pretty neat. It's a completely different feeling. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. A little bit with Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's chief medical officer, as he is part of this planning for training camps and the season.
We do expect to have positive tests. That's because this disease is still endemic across our society. So as long as it's present, we know that we will have some positives. The goal of everything we're doing with our testing, tracking, tracing program is quickly identify who tests positive, get those individuals isolated away from the team, get them the appropriate treatment, and try to prevent an outbreak.
Isn't that the goal? That's the ultimate goal for every single sport, is catch it early, put these health and safety protocols in place, figure out the best way to prevent an outbreak, and move forward the best that you possibly can. And of course, it requires that everybody is all in.
We've been doing a lot of education, and that will continue to go on because we want people to understand you got to do the appropriate thing when you're away from the facility. And that means, again, wearing a mask, good hand hygiene, staying away from sick people, avoiding public gatherings. So those choices are going to be key to the success of the entire program. And again, it's something that has to stretch over the entire season.
The NFL is dead serious about this. And if you know the NFL, you know that Roger Goodell is all about discipline. He's not necessarily judge, jury, and executioner anymore, but he takes his behavior protocols and his discipline responsibilities very seriously. And over the weekend, the league, in conjunction with the NFLPA, distributed this memo to all of the agents, the player reps, and told them, here are the unacceptable off-field activities where you will lose money, you will potentially face discipline, you will not be allowed to play, you'll have extra quarantines if you engage in any of these activities. An indoor party of more than 15 people, going to church where there's greater than 25% capacity. I mean, the NFL is not messing around and has made it very clear that if you do not comply, you're going to pay. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.